a radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant.
That's a G.
Yo, and George.
Thanks, Joe.
Okay. Yeah.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Hello and welcome aboard Gallant and George on a Thursday, June 6th, 2024. Happy D-Day to everybody. The most badass thing that we have ever done as a country, the combined invasion of Normandy, France, to eventually kick those krauts in the ass and take Hitler down. Hell yeah, USA, USA. Anyone who knows someone who had to fight through that day, you know someone who is a true hero. I hope you guys are all doing well. Joe George is taking today and tomorrow off, so just Sean Mapes hanging out with me. Yesterday, as our show was going on, a very quick Astros game took place, and they lost. They lost 4-2 to the Cardinals. They were not able to get anything going offensively against Cardinals pitcher Miles Mikolas, who has an ERA of 5.32 and one of the most try-hard mustaches I've seen in a while. Although, maybe I'm just not confident enough to rock a mustache myself. Whatever the case, I mean, all the Astros were able to do in yesterday's game was muster 5 hits, score 2 runs, and I get it. There's no Alex Bregman. And I get it. There's no Kyle Tucker. But 3-3 on a homestand against a couple of teams that are on the same level as you, it's not the end of the world, but we need better. And we're going to keep saying this, I'm sure, over and over again, but stretches of 6 games where you go 3-3. I mean, we all can do a little bit of math here. Maybe not Joe, but we all are capable of math. And we realize that an Astros team that's 7 games below 500 and looking up at the Seattle Mariners and the AL West standings, eventually this is going to have to get heated up. And maybe this upcoming road trip that the Astros have is where it all takes place. I mean, they are playing a very easy schedule in this month of June, and they're going to take on the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim over the weekend. I mean, you should be able to get your second sweep of the year in Anaheim with Framber Valdez, with Justin Verlander, maybe not so much with Hunter Brown, though he's been pitching better of late. But eventually these things are going to have to start happening. The winning streaks. I'm really saying the obvious at this moment in time. Perhaps we need to introduce a new feature to the show, and a show that's chock full of bits. I'm sure a lot of you have heard about the Doomsday Clock. Whether you watched the movie The Watchmen, the TV show, didn't have it in there. Or perhaps you're just familiar with history, or you love to look up the fear porn that we see in our news headlines these days that generally has to do with, one, global warming, or two, the possible outbreak of World War III, followed by, three, artificial intelligence and the developments that are happening on that side of things. But for those who don't know, the Doomsday Clock is a symbol that represents the likelihood of a human-made global catastrophe. For the Houston Astros, I suppose that the Astros' Doomsday Clock is a symbol that represents the likelihood of a Jim Crane and Jeff Bagwell catastrophe in the kitchen. The actual Doomsday Clock in real life, we're at 90 seconds to midnight. It's kind of scary, huh? I don't think the Astros are quite there. But Sean, if we could get a little sound of what a Doomsday Clock is, I mean, the Astros have got to start getting this thing together. I mean, that's That's what it sounds like. You can hear the nuclear fallout and the radioactive blistering in the background. They're going to have plenty of opportunities to get back to where they theoretically could be, which is atop the AL West at the end of the year. But, I mean, yesterday was a blown opportunity. That guy on the mound for the Cardinals, even if you're missing two of your best hitters, he stinks. He stinks. His ERA is almost 5.5, which is almost 6. And his mustache is annoying, Sean. It's annoying to me that that guy shut you down.
Maybe a team that has, in the past, dealt with issues with the Minute Maid Park batter's eye. Maybe they're just like, I can't stop staring at that mustache. Oh, he just pitched. Oh, God. Was that a strike? Maybe it's the mustache. Maybe the mustache, they just are staring like, what is this guy, a carnival barker?
Is this guy part of a barbershop quartet?
Yeah.
Is he a bare-knuckle boxer from the 1920s?
And now he's throwing 95, and I have to hit this thing?
This speakeasy enthusiast who probably wears an elaborate apron and takes 10 minutes to put together one cocktail, shaking it the entire time like he's Tom Cruise in the movie Cocktail? So, yeah, maybe that is a bit of a distraction. Maybe that's the excuse you can make for the Astros today. But they're 7 games back of the Seattle Mariners, who are 8-2 in their last 10. And the Mariners can't score. They got a run differential of +7, despite being 7 games over .500. But you can't score. The offense continues to be an issue. And, I mean, every single time you think that they're about to step on the gas, they step on the brakes instead. So hopefully this weekend changes things. I'm curious, though, 713-780-3776 to call or to text. How far away you think the Astros are from their own doomsday? I'm going to say, because I don't quite want to exaggerate in the way that the real-life doomsday clock does, I mean, at a certain point, you're going to run out of time. 90 seconds left?
Do they move it like 1 second at a time or 5 seconds at a time?
I think every January they offer a new time.
Okay.
So, I would think that this year has made things a little worse. You know, we got derechos in the backyard. Yeah. We got more artificial intelligence. Old Pooty, he keeps on having some fun, right? So there's lots of things to think about from that perspective. But that lack of urgency that we touched on earlier in the week, you know, Joe Espada talking about the pitching staff. I like the guys that we have. We have to continue to push each other. Hopefully the young kids will continue to throw well. Like, I like the optimism. What else are you supposed to say? But, you know, maybe the Astros need some sort of doomsday clock in the clubhouse.
Yeah. Just to really enforce the, like, hey, we can't keep scoring all of our runs in only one inning, which they did last night, or yesterday afternoon. They had the back-to-back home runs, and they're like, I think we proved our point. Wait, no, guys, we're still down.
Still down. Right. I mean, Yonder Diaz had a home run in the third straight game. That's cool. Trey Cabbage hit a home run. That was completely unexpected. Awesome. Yeah. Honestly, you expect Jose Abreu to hit a home run over Trey Cabbage. But Cabbage went yard.
Yeah.
And still, ultimately, you're thinking to yourself, okay, they might be a lot closer to midnight than we think. And you know what's going to happen when the doomsday clock hits midnight here in Houston? At least here on this radio program from noon to 3. I mean, you're going to just force feed you Houston Texans football. We are going to force feed it to you. And you might be upset about that. There are some out there. I know the Twitch in particular. They still haven't bought into the Houston Texans. And you know what? I kind of get it. The schedule last year was easy. They lost a lot of games against quarterbacks that they shouldn't have. But, I mean, I feel like things are definitely trending in the right direction for that team. I mean, they don't have any dumb contracts like, I don't know, Lance McCullers, Rafael Montero, a contract that's aging poorly, like Christian Javier, a contract that doesn't look like it could possibly age well in Josh Hader. Jose Abreu still has a year and a half left on his. I mean, that's what we're going to be doing. We're all going to be transitioning together with some deep steel blue pills. Although I don't know if that's necessarily the doctor prescription to help you transition to
other
things. Yeah. They give you some other things there. Mr. Brostash on the Twitch says, if you go back a full season from today, the Astros are below 500. Just think who it's who they are right now. Well, I want to know, Mr. Brostash, how many minutes away from midnight they are. That's what I want to know. From the 409, the doomsday clock for the Astros is Jeff Bagwell's watch.
Whoa. That's like the end of the first Men in Black movie, where it's like the universe. Actually, it's a game of marbles.
It's a game of marbles. It would be pretty concerning if Jeff Bagwell was like, ah, just winds that thing forward. Yeah, Jeff Bagwell's not the person I'd want anywhere near that doomsday clock. No offense.
I arguably don't want him near a baseball team. I can't imagine near a doomsday clock.
Yeah. Again,
look at the back of the baseball card on the doomsday. Look at the back of the watch.
The back of the watch?
Look, it says Timex. We got time, all right?
We're only doing it. If Jeff Bagwell is only wearing a Timex, I'm not a watch guy. I have a couple of friends who are watch guys, and they're very – it sucks whenever they start talking about them because I have one, but I only want it because when I was back at the flagship, there was this competition for what ended up being Zadig gift cards, and it was like a murder mystery, and someone who was cute in this murder mystery play like gave me way too many hints like off the record, and I ended up getting the prize for that because of the hints that she gave me because I wasn't paying any attention during it.
No.
So I have this watch. It's a Baume & Mercier, but I don't know a thing about watches. My friends will talk about watches all the time, and I just sit there and I'm like, yeah, I have a Rolex, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, cool, man. I have crippling debt. Sean Mapes by the glass. I'm Paul Gallant. It is Gallant at George, ESPN, 97.5 and 92.5. You can join us on our YouTube channel at ESPN Houston or on twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. There are some funny stories taking place across baseball in terms of paths the Astros could have taken in 2024. I suppose things could be worse. You'll hear why next. And Texans minicamp continues. There's somebody that we have not touched on to this point who also is raising eyebrows in a good way out on that practice field. You'll hear about it next. Stick around.
It's Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
We asked in the first segment, how close to midnight are the Houston Astros on the Jeff Bagwell Memorial Doomsday Clock? One texter says 10:59 p.m., about to hit 11, the panic button is creeping in view. You know what? That ain't bad. I want to be where you're at. That is not bad. 10:59 p.m., that's probably where we were as a species, humans, circa the 1800s, when we started all of those factories. But again, today, going into the year, we were at 90 seconds to midnight. That is 11:58:30. So I want to be where you're at, Mr. Texter. You're a full hour behind. You're in mountain time. Congratulations to you. Speaking of mountain time, Mr. Brostash says, I think we Astros fans are that monk on top of the mountain looking at the waves engulfing the Himalayas from the film 2012. Yeah. With John Cusack? With
underrated.
Amanda Peet?
Underrated banger.
It's a terrible disaster movie, but it's fun.
It was very of the time because there's like real life people that you maybe went to school with, or maybe in my case, were school teachers teaching you that honestly thought the world was going to end.
Because the Mayan calendar ended in 2012. Listen, the Mayans couldn't even see the Spanish coming to wipe them out. Okay, so we really care about what the Mayans, how lazy they were. They couldn't make a calendar go past 2012.
Or maybe have we thought about the fact that they were wiped out? Maybe that's why the calendar ended.
Yeah.
They had other stuff going on.
Yeah. A little smallpox. Conquistadors.
You gotta worry about Hernan Cortez, all right?
He was up north. I forget who the one was down in the Andes and such. But Mr. Brostash also says, Bobby Dynamite can't even save us anymore. We are past the point of no return. I don't think we're quite the day after tomorrow, close to that, where like in 3 days, global warming completely transforms the Earth with Dennis Quaid and Jake Gyllenhaal and Emmy Rossum. Sub. Good movie.
No, we're
but a little bit too preachy.
Yeah, we're not. That is like if they get eliminated from playoff contention, like the week after they get eliminated from playoff contention, yeah. You're just like, man, we're still trotting out here already eliminated. Yeah, we're not there yet. We're closer to 11 o'clock.
I feel like I'm bringing the vibes down with this doomsday clock talk. So perhaps we need to slam the bad vibes button.
Bad vibes alert, man. Bad vibes alert, man.
So the Astros didn't sign Jordan Montgomery. Sean made me aware of this. Jordan Montgomery, who, of course, terrorized the Astros in the ALCS last year, he's with the Diamondbacks. He was booed coming off of the field after lasting just 2 innings, giving up 7 hits, 3 walks, 2 homers, and 6 runs. He says missing spring training has been a factor in his slow start. I sure would hope so. But, hey, you know, for all the issues that the Astros have, if you missed it yesterday, Christian Javier and Jose Urquidy are out for the year. They're getting elbow surgery. If you had him, you could theoretically have another contract on your books that is aging very poorly. Also of note, this bumps me out a little bit, but there's nothing quite like a ironic or sarcastic fan movement. The White Sox have lost 13 in a row, tying the franchise record, and their fans are responding by writing in Martin Maldonado on the All-Star Game vote. I like it. I respect that.
Oh, also, MLB has the, I don't want to call it stupid, has the eye-roll-worthy rule that every team gets a All-Star Game representative, which I get what they're trying to do. I'm still rolling my eyes at this. So he has a chance to actually make the All-Star team.
He does.
Because I assume they do it off of who on the worst team in baseball. Like, how do you pick the All-Star off the worst team in baseball? I imagine they do go off of fan votes.
But when it's somebody that's written in, you're going to have a hard time getting enough. Because enough people are going to have to put in the effort of adding Martin Maldonado in.
But if you're a White Sox fan and you're trying to vote for someone, who are you going to vote for if not Martin Maldonado?
Off the top of my head, yeah. Tommy Pham, because I want to see him fight people at the All-Star game.
Yeah, okay.
I want to see who else is in that fantasy baseball league that perhaps he has words for.
There's more likelihood that he'll slap someone because it's at an All-Star game, so it's everyone all in the same room. Yeah, so I don't know. I imagine the MLB at some point in some deep dark room, they'll be like, I'm not putting Martin Maldonado on this thing. Kidding me?
I want it to happen.
We can cook the books a little bit on this and get some relief where no one's ever heard of.
How about we help out? I mean, Martin Maldonado, for all of his defensive prowess, does deserve an All-Star trip.
Yeah.
Do you think Maldonado would say, hey, I realize people are doing this ironically?
I would rather have a vacation.
I don't know where the All-Star game is this year. So it really, I guess, depends on the location. All-Star weekend. All-Star Baseball 2024. It is. Oh, it's in Arlington. Ew. Ew. Maldi doesn't want to go there. He's going to get in fights with random Rangers fans.
He might get in fights with Aroldis Garcia.
Adolis Garcia and him. Maybe
Marcus
in a fight.
Simeon.
Yeah. That actually, I mean, that would be worth it.
Yeah.
So I think that's
Can
the reason
to Can you bring Tommy Pham as backup?
That would be pretty funny. Tag team, Maldi. Yeah. Maldi with the orange Ronald McDonald hair and Tommy Pham just show up.
Tommy Pham wearing a suit like he's in Secret Service. Like he's got an earpiece and a suit on.
Yeah.
Hey, I trained for a reason.
Oh, boy. All right. Listen, we got to talk about the Houston Texans right now. So, look, there's been a lot of buzz about one player in particular, Kamari Lassiter, but that kind of buzz is the stuff you hear every single offseason. He's made some plays. Great. I want to pause before we hand Kamari Lassiter the Texans' number two starting corner gig. This audio, I think, is more important. Will Anderson, Houston Texans defensive end, number three overall pick last year, was talking about the addition of Azeez Al-Shaair, who played for the Titans last year and played for D'Amico Ryans before. The Texans didn't really have a leadership, a leader in the middle of their defense last year. A lot of young guys. But I think they got a leader in the middle of their defense now.
He's bringing us in together as a defense and talking to us, holding us accountable, challenging us every day to get to the ball, to get off the ball, to make plays, all this other stuff. And, you know, it's a funny story. The other day, like, all my years of football, I never had a line. Like, my thing is, like, I don't want anybody sending it to me. Like, I'm always self-aware. And so I jumped off sides, and I got mad at myself. And he was like, stop f***ing pouting. And it kind of like, hold on, like, who are you talking to? Like, and it changed my, like, I respected that because I was like, bro, like, okay, like, I respect that because as a man and as a player, bro, that's, we all need that. You know what I'm saying? And I look at him totally, like, I looked at him different, but I really look at him totally different now because that's the type of, like, mentality that we have to have if we're going to go far in this league and if we're going to win a lot of games, somebody that's not scared to get on people when they do the wrong thing. So it was a challenge for us, and I accepted it.
A challenge for us, and I accepted it when he said, stop effing pouting. They did not have anyone on the defense last year that was capable of doing that. Jimmy Ward was hurt a lot. Jalen Petrie was in his second year. Derek Stingley's a quiet guy. You take a look at the pass rush. Jerry Hughes was on the team last year, but didn't really have as much of an impact as he'd had the year before. They didn't really have a veteran with that kind of, I guess, gravitas. Denzel Perriman wasn't that guy. He was better than the linebackers they had before. Blake Cashman was his first time having a good season. I think Al-Shaair is going to be perhaps the most impactful addition on the defense, not from a pass rush perspective, because you brought in Danielle Hunter and you brought in D'Nico Autry. Those guys got a lot of sacks, but the defense did not really have a traditional quarterback last year. You're expecting that to be at that middle linebacker position. And I don't know if Al-Shaair is going to be able to do the kind of things that a Roquan Smith, a Patrick Queen, Bobby Wagner back in the day. I don't know if he's capable of those things. But I would definitely argue that communication could have been better for the Houston Texans defense last season with the amount of times that they let guys slip past them down the field. And to have a guy that's actually going to get on people when they F up, I don't think they had that last year other than on the sidelines with D'Amico Ryans and Matt Burke, their defensive coordinator. Now I think they actually have that. Yes, this is anecdotal evidence based off of one Will Anderson story, but I think it's a good sign for the defense.
Yeah, maybe he could have the same effect that like we saw Dylan Brooks, Jeff Green, Fred VanVleet, that kind of thing on the Rockets this season, where Dylan Brooks wasn't the most impactful on the court Rocket, but you know, behind the scenes, he probably helped a lot with the maturity and taking what the coaches want and enforcing it as a player.
And the occasional, you know, hey,
look, stare down.
Stare down, kicking the nads. Although he's not a kicker, he's a puncher. Draymond
that
Green.
That was only the preseason, too.
Exactly.
He cut that out for the regular season.
But I'd be cool if he brought it back. Draymond Green is the MMA guy. He's doing hands and feet. Dylan Brooks, he's just a hand guy. And then the stare at nothing. He never would. That was my favorite development of this past season, going to a Rockets game, going courtside, and seeing that Dylan Brooks was never staring at anything to begin with.
Yeah, it was about his own mental state. Just
meditation. It's key for my therapist.
Get zen.
That's Sean Mapes behind the glass. I'm Paul Gallant. It's Gallant and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Joe George is out today and tomorrow. He'll be back on Monday. Up next, more Texans minicamp talk. Texans swarm with DJ Bien-Aimé. We got to figure out, of all the things taking place at minicamp, all the good things we're hearing about their second-round pick, John Metchie, what's true, what isn't. First, though, let me tell you about my friends at the Highway Cantina, where you can get a 975 tall Texan margarita. DJ's in studio right now, and he's not even responding because he knows that I've got the voice of an angel. And the Highway Cantina, I mean, it's my heaven, where the angels are found. Amazing salsa verde, amazing regular salsa, amazing drinks, amazing food. The wood-fired oysters are to die for. I'm probably going to be there later tonight to watch my Boston Celtics hopefully win game one against the Dallas Mavericks in the NBA Finals. It's a great place to go to, whether you're going before or after the baseball game or the basketball game or the soccer game, or you're trying to impress your boss because you work downtown, or you're trying to do a happy hour. It's a fantastic spot, even for a first date. Got a date story for later in the show as well. It is the Highway Cantina. Tell them Paul Gallant sent you, right smack in the middle of East Downtown on St. Emmanuel.
You're back with Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul and Joe.
The Houston Texans mini camps that are open to the media have wrapped up. We saw them both on Tuesday and Wednesday speaking with guys like the man seated to my right, the one and only Houston Texans beat reporter for ESPN, DJ Bien-Aimé. DJ, what's up, bud?
I'm doing all right. You know, I have a lot of beef with you, but...
Why do you have a lot of beef with me?
Because you're supposed to join me in the flag football league.
That's true.
So...
And you're on a team with bums, huh?
It's so bad. So in three games, guess what? How many points we're averaging per game?
One touchdown.
I believe in wish. We're averaging 1.3 points per game. We haven't scored a touchdown yet. In three games. We haven't even, like, lucked into a touchdown.
Then how have you scored?
Pick six
on a two-point conversion?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
We almost had another one. And the guy pitched me the ball, and I was running. I stepped out of bounds. I stepped out of bounds.
So you're like Iowa offensively.
It is so, and we're terrible defensively.
Oh, boy.
Like, there was the last two games, like, the ref had to, like, use the mercy rule.
So you're mad at me for not joining you on this?
Yes, game. Yes. I'm very
Why?
Mad at you. Because you could have...
I have changed? This team sucks.
Okay, believe it or not, we're not as bad as our record indicates.
Shut up.
We're not as bad as our record indicates. I will say this. No, because if you were there, right, like we could slot, and we were at our quarterback for the last two games. We could slot, even though in the first game,
man, Whittem, really missing out 1.3 points a game.
We didn't score, but that's not here or there. We could slot people into different roles. You know, we could put you at corner, possibly put you on linebacker, possibly put you at safety.
I can't play every position, and you
nah,
can't play
but
every
I know
position.
That. Yeah. But you know, we kind of found something. I'm the pass rusher now because we can rush off the snap.
There you go.
So, like, none of these guys are Tom Brady or Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen.
I don't want to play.
So, if I'm rushing them, they're probably going to make a mistake.
I don't want to bore people too much with flag football talk, but the last team, DJ, that I played on a regular basis, this is my big obstacle. When I was in Seattle, we won, like, 20 games in a row. I don't want to play on a team that loses. I can't deal with it.
No,
It's so frustrating.
I can't deal with it either. Like after our last loss, we went off to the side and you know people were taking a knee and we're discussing, and I'm just like in my head I'm like yo, I was talking to the ref during the game, and I was like man, this stuff is bad. He said, I know. I don't like reffing this. you know how bad that is? The ref is like, you know what I mean? Like,
well, thoughts and prayers to you and your mark-ass flag football team. We do have to play together again.
Yeah.
It'll happen again at some point
soon. We have four more games.
Okay.
We'll be looking for another team. Again, like my big issue.
It's your fault, bro.
Yeah. I had reasons for not joining them, but yeah, one of them was because I wanted to play co-ed so I could find a hot wife.
I don't think you're going to find a hot wife playing flag
yeah, you
football.
You can. You want to find that
in
buddy
these
girl.
Leagues? Nah, man.
Well.
Nah, not in these leagues.
No, nah, you just are you're putting women down here, DJ.
I'm not putting women down. If you want to find a hot woman, there's a TikTok trend saying that just go join a running group.
You know what? As someone who drove through the heights last night and drove past the path, I agree. Holy crap.
All right, then. There you have it.
I almost crashed into the mailbox. Anyway, hey, the Houston Texans, they're the hot girl in town right now in the sports world. Am I right? What a transition, huh?
Yeah.
So, mini camp, we've seen a couple of practices. The thing, DJ, that's jumped out to me has been the play of a couple of guys, at least based off of everyone talking about them.
Yeah.
I want to start with Kamari Lassiter, the second-round pick.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people looked at him. He's a nickel corner. Is he actually going to have a chance to start on the outside? Is that between Jeffrey Okuda, CJ Henderson, the former top 10 picks that have been on three teams in now 4 or 5 years? What have you seen out of Kamari Lassiter?
Yeah, I think he has, like, how do I put this? In terms of the lead, like, it's like if you start in a 400-meter race, he started at the 200 mark, and he only has 200 meters to go, and the rest of the guys are starting at the 400-meter mark.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, if he gets caught, then he gets caught. But it's that – because, like, he's run with the ones the most – like, out of all – we've been two OTAs and two minicamp practices. He's run with the ones the majority of the time. Like, you know, there was like a period. I remember the first one where you had like CJ and Jeff Okuda kind of rotating in. But then I remember the next OTA, it was just Kamari,
mm-hmm.
I think, along with like CJ. And then, like, obviously, minicamp has just been exclusively him at, on the outside. He hasn't even done that many reps. Me and Cole.
Thompson.
Yeah, Cole Thompson. We're talking about it. He said we haven't seen him take that many reps in the nickel. So he looks like he's gonna be on the outside.
Interesting.
And he has like a legitimate, you know, because again, like, you know,
they're not in pads, so a legitimate.
Cornerback play doesn't like switch that much from pads to like.
No doubt. Yeah. I suppose if there's anything to judge, it's hey, how are the corners looking against the wide receivers? And we've seen a couple of video highlights, at least, of Lassiter in coverage against Stephon Diggs and others. So okay, what about him is standing out, because obviously he's getting the most reps with the first team defense. Is it his ability to break on the ball, his speed? Because that was something that a lot of people were questioning. His 40 time was probably the reason that he fell to the second round, a guy coming out of Georgia.
Yeah, I think so far what we've seen is, you know, he puts himself in good position with his technique, and he's able to like break on the ball when necessary. He's able to transition into his breaks, out of his breaks pretty smoothly. Obviously his speed isn't like blazing, but he's not what the 4.6 says at the 40 time. I was talking to our front office guy. He said that he doesn't think he trained a lot for it, which might explain that. Now, I'm not 150% sure about that, but that's what one front office guy across the league told me. Well, but then again, like, you know.
You ran track. I mean, it's a very unnatural position to get out of that kind of track stance versus NFL stance.
Yeah, no, for sure. But I mean, again, like, you know, some guys don't need to train for
it. True.
That, you know, some guys are just fast like that. So he's not a burner, but he's not, I don't think it's going to be a situation where, you have to worry about him really getting like burnt down the field consistently because he just can't run with guys. So I would say that, you know, those are things that kind of stood out about him. And I think he has like, cause the other thing too, like from just a little bit of what we've seen, like CJ and Jeff Okuda, like it kind of showed a little bit, not too much, but a little bit of like why this is their third team in 5 seasons as two top 10 picks.
Right. Not an athleticism problem, maybe a knowing what you're supposed to do problem.
No, I think CJ Henderson still has really good athleticism.
Right. That's what I figured. Both of these guys, so, I mean, but you and D'Amico talk them up.
I think Jeff.
Jeff Okuda.
The injuries have taken a little bit of a toll on him. So, like, he kind of has to, like, be, like, I don't want to say perfect, but, like, his technique has to always be on point with everything from route recognition to reading the quarterback's eyes to breaking getting in and out of his breaks. To being able to train, like his technique has to be flawless,
mm-hmm.
Because like, you know, he did tear his Achilles, and he wasn't a burner coming out. He ran like 4.5 coming out of Ohio State. He just had he was known for really great technique. So I think, you know, he didn't have a great showing throughout OTAs and minicamp, but you know, he'll have a I don't think he's gonna get cut or anything once training camp comes around, but it's for sure Kamari. You know, Kamari is younger, he's under contract for the next 4 years, and he was second round pick. It just kind of behooves them if it's even close to just go with the young guy because there's more upside there.
It's exciting to hear all of those things. In case you're just tuning in, DJ Bien-Aimé with the ESPN. He's your Houston Texans beat reporter for ESPN. We're talking about Kamari Laster, the second round pick of the Texans. A little bit ago, DJ said, hey, if this is a 400-meter dash, Kamari Laster is starting at 200 meters away. Everyone else is far behind him. You had this tweet, and it also intrigues me. Now, this is a pretty loaded position group, seeing as they just added Stephon Diggs and Tank Dell is back, and Nico Collins just got that extension. Quote from DJ Bien-Aimé on Twitter, I want to say an observation I've seen throughout the offseason. The explosiveness of John Metchie III appears to be back. He's positioning himself to make training camp a battle for playing time. What are you seeing from him?
Yeah, he looks a lot more explosive. I remember talking to him. Interviewing him for his story regarding CJ, and then, you know, we just chopped it up, just like about how he was feeling, anything like that. I actually like really like John. Like, you know, he's actually really got a good guy to talk to and stuff like that. And he was just saying like he's a year removed from getting back from defeating cancer, and a couple years removed from the ACL, and like, you know, tear and things of that nature. And it's just he now has had a full offseason to just concentrate on getting back. I mean, to just building on what he built last year, right? Increasing his weight, becoming more explosive, becoming stronger, things like that, versus where you're just trying to just get back to where you were before. And where you were before necessarily isn't going to be good enough when you get into the NFL along with a layoff. So now he had a whole entire year of playing, along with now a whole full offseason where he could just concentrate on his game and his athleticism and his strength and speed and agility. Now he looks like the guy that they took in the second round, where you see some of the explosive and athleticism. Like me personally, you have your top three, right? That's that. But I mean, like, if he continues on this trajectory, because he's run with the ones at times, he's run with the ones a little bit from what we've seen, more than Robert Woods. If it comes down to that point, like from a financial standpoint,
yeah,
it just makes sense to, because you could save up to
$5 million or so, right, with Woods.
Right, if you release Woods.
And Noah Brown's still working his way back from injury, right? So,
another opportunity for Metchie on that front as well.
Sticking with the wide receivers, so we finally heard from Stephon Diggs after a rather long hiatus, considering the Texans got him, 3 months ago? Earlier this week, my impression watching the press conference, DJ, which I was not at, was, hey, he is trying to impress everybody here. It's almost like he is pressing the reset button, and we'll see how long that lasts. He's a wide receiver that's actually got pelts on the wall with what he's done in the league to this point. But what were your impressions hearing from Stephon for the first time? I know you were more curious than maybe other people that were at the press conference about, hey,
stuff?
What happened in Buffalo?
To start off, you know, I do agree with you that I don't necessarily think he's trying to impress. I think he's being himself, and I think this environment is more conducive for a guy like Stephon Diggs. Also, like, in all honesty, like, this team needed a little bit more a-holes. last year, like, they had, like, when you're thinking about it, if you look at the roster from last year, right, and I'm not saying, like, Stephon is an a-hole, but, like, he kind of has that, like, he's a little more edgy, right? Based on what we've seen in Buffalo, based on what we've seen in Minnesota. Based on last year, who was that edgy guy for the Texans?
Stroud's not that. Will Anderson's not that.
So Stroud he's edgy, but you're not going to see it. He's a little edgy. You know, he's for sure edgy. You're just not going to see it. But, like, that a little bit over the top. Only person we can really think about is Steven Nelson. If you look at the entire team, for real, who's going to really rock the boat at times, it was Steven Nelson. But, I mean, outside of that, I mean, they kind of need that next level edge of, like, you know. And, I mean, Aziz is kind of in that boat too now. I mean, Will was talking about how, you
know, great story.
Will was pouting and he said, stop bleeping pouting.
We played the audio in the last segment. Yeah, I like hearing that. So, yeah, if you're looking for leadership, Al Shaier is aboard and Diggs is aboard.
Yeah.
With Al Shaier, I get the impression that, hey, there's not really any questions about like how he'll be during the rough time.
Because he and D'Amico Ryans
have a relationship going back to his time in San Francisco. I feel like from his perspective, I think they got a great leader in Al Shaier. We'll see what he does actually on the field. He's going to have to prove it. I don't know if he's Roquan Smith, Patrick Queen, something like that. But
no,
hey,
I don't think so either.
But hey, at the very least, hey, there's somebody in the middle of that defense that's got that edge.
Right.
But to bring it back to Stephon Diggs, everything we're seeing at first is great, and hopefully it lasts.
And they like him so far. You know what I'm saying? His teammates are gravitating towards him. But you know, with everybody that goes to a new team, the first few months are great. It's like when you get in a new relationship, right? This is like the best person you've ever dated in your entire life. Yeah. And then like by like month four, you find out that they don't wipe after they use the bathroom.
Ew. Is that personal experience?
No, that's not personal experience. That's okay, not personal experience. I'm just saying, it was the first thing that came to my mind. Let me just say it. You know, sometimes, my friends, they say I got CTE. So sometimes that's my CTE brain.
All right.
And CJ made a good point that Stephon wanted to be around dogs. And I think the label about him being a diva, I don't think he's actually a diva at all.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's just ultra competitive and wants to win by any means necessary. I'm gonna get the ball, but by any means necessary. And I think that sometimes if it doesn't look like that, he can get extremely frustrated. And I think he's not Antonio Brown, right? He's not Terrell Owens. I'm trying to think who are some other divas that we've thought about like that are whatever. But those two are like the main guys
that we
know are divas, right?
Yeah.
Stephon just wants to win. And CJ mentioned that Stephon wanted to be on a team that was surrounded by dogs. And everywhere he looks, he has dogs to lean on and things of that nature. So I think I think it's gonna work. I don't think there's gonna be one, he's on a 1-year deal anyway. So I don't think there's gonna be any like legitimate issues where he's quote unquote rocking the boat. One, because I think CJ's good enough to like, he's gonna make sure he's fed. Bobby's gonna make what we've seen him, how he was using Stephon. Stephon's gonna get a target a lot. You know, people talk about it to be 3,000-yard receivers. That's not happening. No shot. That's not happening. But I do think that from a financial standpoint, the Texans are gonna want to get their money's worth. So Stephon's gonna get a lot of targets. Nico's gonna get a lot of targets. Obviously, Tank is going to fit into that mold where he could fit into that mold. I think he'll still get some targets. But I think overall, between the three, it could be a really dynamic group. But obviously, I don't anticipate 3,000-yard receivers. But I can anticipate, like,
yeah,
you know, Nico maybe with, like, 13, Stephon with, like, 11, and, like, Tank with, like, 758.
Yeah, I would bet all three of them are over 700. And, again, if you're freaking out about how many yards they get in an offense that has this many receivers, I think you're missing the big picture here.
Right.
Now, As far as Diggs and the time in Buffalo,
he
did kind of tap dance around questions about the pass. He mentioned the coaching change, and the coaching change did result in more wins for Buffalo. And I mean, the last image that we have of Stephon Diggs in Buffalo was that drop that he had against the Kansas City Chiefs.
Right,
is that a fair way to characterize his entire year last year? No, he was good in the first half of the season.
Yeah, then the second half he was. But I went back and rewatched the film regarding Stephon. Obviously, I think how do I frame this? Like, he can still get vertical, but he's way more lethal in the intermediate game. He can still really separate the top of his routes. And it looked like there was an emphasis into obviously running the ball more. And I think him and Josh just weren't on the same page. Like, there were a lot of plays where, like, Stephon is running around, he's wide open, and then, like, Josh misses him. Mm-hmm. And he just has his arms out, like, you know. So I think it was more that. I don't think that, you know, the second half where he – went his last 13 games without 100 yards is indicative of him being washed. I don't think it's nearly that at all in that regard. Like, watching a minicamp, he can still separate laterally. And that's one of the most important things for a receiver is, can they separate laterally if they're not like 6 foot mm-hmm. 4, 5, 6, whatever. So I still think he can play. But yeah, I do wish that we would have asked a little bit more questions about his time in Buffalo, because that's the national story regarding Stephon Diggs. You know, like, the guy signed a 4-year, $104 million contract extension in, what was that, in 2022?
Yeah, not that long ago.
by and 2 years later he gets dealt. You know what I'm saying?
And on
not
the
even
Twitch,
for the first round pick. He gets traded for a second round pick.
Yeah, and on the,
for
on
the
Twitch,
following year,
exactly. And on top of that, I mean, they adjusted his contract as pointed out on the Twitch.
Yeah,
I mean, clearly they want him to prove
right
many things, not just that he can still play, but also that he can buy in. And as you said, he's saying all the right things. Great, but you know, whether it's a new relationship or it's a new job, like of course at first it's gonna go great.
Exactly. So like you know, I do wish we could have like. You know, as a whole,
I agree with
into
you.
That a little more. I think that's just way more important. That's relevant to the team now because you know your past is an indication of can be an indicator of your future, right?
Yeah.
Like if you're a lazy, no good, you know, eat chips all day type of guy, you might get fired from your job because you're gonna one day be you know up all or let's say if you're a consistent party, you party all day, all night, whatever. Eventually, it's gonna catch up with your job because that's who you are. That's your past experiences, mm-hmm. And if you don't at least acknowledge like, hey, you know, I need to work on this, work on that, then like you're gonna continue to repeat the same things.
Yeah,
I will give Coach T Davis of SI. He did ask like, what are some things that you could take away from your experiences in Buffalo and you know, in Minnesota, and he did give a good answer and just a sense of putting in more time and things of that nature. But yeah, I think I wish we could have for sure asked more questions about like what got us to this point versus like him being here now. Because when has a guy ever got traded and like people are and he gets to the new team and the first press conference, he's like, man, I hate it here.
Yeah.
Boy, these players around me suck. The quarterback can't throw. The offensive coordinator don't know what he's doing. I hate the head coach. Everybody, they're always going to say the nice thing. Now, you got to ask that regardless because, you know, at the end of the day, like you do need those quotes. You know, or at least want to hear that because you never know. They might say that. Like when Zach Wilson was asked, like, you know, after they scored 3 points, he was like, hey, like, you know, did you guys let the defense down? Nope.
So, it would have been really funny if someone at the press conference yesterday asked, like, what was your favorite Stephon Diggs, what was your favorite Sean McDermott motivational speech? That's what I kind of wanted to hear.
That would be crazy. That would have been crazy for sure. No, I asked Devin Singletary about the infamous one, and he was just like, what? Like, why is he saying this? Like, what?
I don't understand how anyone's supposed to react when you hear that like, from your coach. Like, if I did that, I feel like at least people would know I'm being sarcastic or ironic. Maybe they wouldn't. But if you're Sean McDermott doing that, I mean, what do you think like, people are going to do?
In a press conference, like, and it's not even like he asks a question, like, you know, asking, like, you know, how you think they were able to execute that. Dude, what? Imagine hearing that at 8 o'clock in the morning. Like, you know, you get in there.
Wake you up.
You know, you're like, what?
That's smelling salts. That's a little bit of 5-hour energy. Yeah,
that's something you like, once you get out of that meeting, you're talking to your teammates about it, and you're for sure calling one of your friends like, yo, like, my coach just asked me about, like, how they were able to execute an attack on 9/11. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
You know,
see, proper thing to use historically would have been today because it's today's D-Day. I was not alive during that. Just took the joke away from you.
What? Y'all know he got on a Larry Bird jersey?
Yeah, I got a Larry Bird jersey on right now.
He got it at Larry Bird's debut.
I met Larry Bird when I was six before my first Celtics
game.
Nah,
you met him.
That was in 1995.
No, you met him at his debut.
Well, you know what? You know what? Considering that was 1979, I look effing good. That wasn't nice. That was that pause, that silence. That wasn't nice. So you can get out of my studio. Whatever. He is DJ Bienave. DJ, always a pleasure, buddy. DJ, you can catch his work on Twitter, covering the Houston Texans, and at ESPN.com. Let's do this again soon, DJ.
Whatever. You should have joined the flag football team.
Dude, that team sucks.
It's your fault.
It's not mine.
It is your fault.
I was not going to
pick your
that
fault.
Team. Coming up next, CJ Stroud. Man, he just keeps on giving us so much more from his $1 million worth of game appearance. Next, it is Gallant and George. No Joe, just Paul. Stick around.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.